broadcasting statewide on the Golf Club Network, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
And a good morning to you. You're in the clubhouse. Welcome. It's February 22nd already. It's almost March. Yes, we're going into spring, but in the meantime, we're at the World Golf Championship Accenture Match Play, and the LPGA is playing with some young players on the LPGA making incredible strides up the leaderboard in Thailand, the Honda, and we'll be talking a little bit about that too. But first, you know, at Match Play Accenture, the WGC Accenture, I don't know if you filled out a bracket or you had your favorites, but bracket busting. I'm melting down. I'm sorry to say that I have one player left, and if he wins, then I've succeeded, but it's not looking really good for me. The one thing that everybody said is, you know, there's only one in the top 10 who's left in this field, and that's Bubba Watson. But it was an interesting observation that was made by one of the guys that no one expected. Scott summed it up. He summed it up on Bracket Busters. The PGA Tour is deep, and anyone can win on any given day. That would be number G1. Yes, thank you very much.
You know, Tiger raised the bar a lot, and, you know, everybody's better. It's not, you know, 10 guys are the best anymore. There's 50, 60 guys every week, and there's 60 guys here. And, you know, when somebody's on, they're on. And so, you know, there's not a big of a spread between, you know, who the best players are and, you know, to sort of the next tier.
It's interesting. Scott Piercy, you know, you go, who? Well, he put all of his money down about 2 years ago to play in a Las Vegas event, and he won $2 million. So the guy is not intimidated by anything. Money doesn't, you know, he went for the $2 million. He put it all in, and he cashed out. But before we hopefully get joined by Gary Williams, otherwise we'll bring a listening to Ian Poulter, Hunter Mahan, Steve Stricker, Scott Piercy's got more to say, Shane Lowry. They're all in. But first, let's thank the people who make this show possible.
The Golf Club, sponsored by Poipu Bay Golf Course. 18 championship holes, visually stunning. Nature and Robert Trent Jones Jr. conspired to create a stunning venue for golfers of all abilities. A unique and unforgettable golf experience. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore gem. Star Protection, for property threat and risk assessment, protection for your home or business, for your concert or special event, like the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. Get the Star Team on your property. Star Protection is what you need in Hawaii and California. And by Princeville's Prince Course, magnificent by nature. Completely renovated greens, bunkers, and clubhouse. The Prince Course is offering Kama'aina unlimited Saturday and Sunday play for just $99. Call 826-5001. Princeville's Prince Course.
All righty. Thank you so much. And Gary Williams, scheduled to join us this morning, Golf Channel co-host Morning Drive. Of course, they've got a brand new set. It's awesome. But in the meantime, as we wait for Mr. Williams to possibly join us, let's get into the clubhouse, so to speak, and find out what these guys who are playing at the WGC Accenture think about, some of the things that were on their minds. And I find it more fascinating sometimes than some of the play. And I just want to say right now, right here, that listening to them talk about their game and talking amongst ourselves about this event is actually sometimes more exciting than watching it on television, because when they change from one match to another match, we seem to lose the continuity. It's a very interesting, very difficult form for television to follow in a way that keeps it dramatic. It's not like the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup, you feel it. You feel it in there. There's just something that just not coming through on television. All right, Ian Poulter. He moved into the third round that's being played today, and they hope to play the fourth round today as well. There was a 45-minute frost delay, and the weather's been, you know, it snowed. They had to delay the entire event a day because of snowfall. It's just above Tucson where they're playing, and Dove Mountain. A lot of people are criticizing the course. the way it's played, and boy, it takes them long to finish a round. We'll talk about that as well. But first, from Ian Poulter, he moved into the third round with a victory over Bo Van Pelt. It was 3-1. And some might have thought Ian Poulter wouldn't be ready for the WGC Accenture. He took 6 weeks off. Remember, he came to Hawaii, he played at Kapalua, he had the delays because of the wind. All right, so now he's coming back, he's playing, and there's a snow delay. He says he's never been in better form.
I think I'm probably more prepared than I've ever been. The work I've done in the off-season, the equipment change, changing new shafts in all my irons, knocking out a 5-wood out of the bag and putting in an extra wedge in the gap that I had, picking up 4-mile-an-hour ball speed on a driver. I couldn't be any happier coming into this week. I even said to Terry on the course today, even when we was two up, I mean, the stuff that I'd seen in the first round and after nine holes of today's round, I'm really happy. I mean, I couldn't be any happier of how I've struck it, how the ball flight has been, my yardages, the gap difference that there's been in my wedges. If I got beat today, I'd still be walking away today thinking that I've made an improvement from where I was 6 months ago, and that's good. So I said to Terry, whatever happens from today in, I know that we've done some great work in the off season. I'm more prepared than what I ever have been, so let's just go and have some fun.
Maybe he'll win a major. He's one of those top players in the world that has not won a major yet. And did you know increasing your swing speed, his by 4 miles an hour in the 6 week off period, that increases, it's like 3 yards per 1 mile an hour of increase in swing speed. So he figures he gets about 10 yards in the air. Not bad. I would like to do that. Got to work on it, though. You've got to work. Now, Hunter Mahan, he's the defending champ. He moved into the third round with a victory over South African Richard Stern. And the defending champ talked about the work that he was doing prepping for this season, and he likes to experiment, but then he got down and just simply focused.
We're imperfect people trying to play an imperfect game, you know, so I never want to be afraid to try things. I feel like we tried some things last year, and I was trying things, and you know, some things just didn't work out. Like this offseason, try to break things down, make things a little bit more simple, and just get back to playing golf and finding things that I need to work on and things that are important to my game, and just work on that stuff. And I feel like I play my best when it's very clear to me what I have to do from a swing perspective, mental perspective, and everything that has to go with the game of golf. And I feel very clear in what I have to do right now, and that allows me to go out there and play golf and play free.
That's nice, playing golf and playing free. I was thinking about, you know, we watch all the different golf events and on Golf Channel and in the magazines, Golf Digest and Golf Week and Golf, and we look at all the different things that are available to us to improve our game, to make it better. Can you imagine what's being thrown at these top players? All the different tweaks that they could do to their game, all the different suggestions being made to them. You know, you could do this and you can do that and you can do this and here's a mental and this isn't. And bottom line is you've got to swing free, you know, play your game. And apparently Hunter Mahan likes to tweak it, but then he just got back to basics. Steve Stricker, one of my favorite players on tour. And now he's shortened his schedule. He just decided, you know, he doesn't want to be out there 24 weeks. He wants to make it more like 13. And he moved into the third round with a victory over Nick Watney, another great American player. But Stricker's turning 46 this year. And in fact, this week, I think he just turned yesterday. He said he's limiting his play, and he says it's really good for him. Mentally, it's really good for him. And I thought that was interesting, you know, limiting your schedule. Wouldn't you be afraid that you weren't going to, like, do that well, maybe not get into the President's Cup or if he does it next year, into the Ryder Cup? Physically, he says he needs to do it because his body needs the rest.
I feel like I come out really fresh. My attitude is really good, and that's worth a lot. You know, and if you look at the history of the game, some of the greatest players in the world, you know, played a very limited schedule. I'm not saying I'm one of those players. I'm just saying that, you know, they must have known something, you know, that coming out playing, you know, 15, 16 times, whatever they did, was good, you know, and I'm going to do less than that. But, you know, for my, there's other reasons why I'm doing that. I just want to be home and be with the family. So I feel like it's taken a little bit of the pressure off, and I'm more excited to be here, and I'm actually ready to play.
Excellent. And doesn't that sound, that makes sense, you know? He also said, hey, you know, I don't really expect to get into the FedEx playoffs, and so I can play free. And that's really the way you should be playing the game, without expectations, without demands. Gary Williams is going to join us, but first we need to take our first commercial break. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Star Protection Agency, providing security across Hawaii since 1991. Licensed and bonded. Property guard and patrol services. Loss prevention. Star Protection provides the security you need with the industry-leading internet-based reporting system. One call does it all. 532-3911. Or on the web at starprotectionagency.com. Star Protection, locally owned with people you trust.
Poipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Poipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay.
Do you have a child or know someone who does that wants to learn how to play golf? Free? At courses throughout the islands on March 9th, new and beginning juniors will receive expert instruction at no charge. Hawaii Junior Golf Day is brought to you by the Aloha Section PGA and the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association. To sign up, go to hsjga.org or call 532-0559.
Let's see, 40 yards to the pin, wind in my face. Where's my wedge? I saw this flop shot on TV. Oh, not even close. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
I'm really pleased to be joined by Gary Williams, the host of Morning Drive on Golf Channel. Before we bring him into the clubhouse, or you probably can hear this, I just thought this was the best comment from Bubba Watson, just kind of out of the blue while he's talking about yesterday's round. Slow play comes up.
It's pretty funny that we're worried about belly putters and long putters, and we've been trying to figure out slow play for 40 years. And we got 32 people in the field, and we had three groups on one hole, which was awesome.
Let's welcome into the show Gary Williams, host of Morning Drive. Good morning, Gary.
Danielle, it's always great to chat with you. How you doing?
I'm doing fabulous, absolutely fabulous. I was listening to Ian Poulter, Hunter Mahan, Steve Stricker, and all the guys. Scott Piercy was talking about, hey, you know, bracket busting and Russ Henley and everybody's brackets fall apart. But the bottom line is the tour is so deep that anybody can win on any given day.
No question. And this is not going to stop happening because, just like you said, the depth, you know, the idea that we always try to make this comparison, I actually think that it helps the interest in the event that, you know, when you can fill out a bracket, we know the interest in the NCAA men's basketball tournament, but that's where the comparison ends. You know, the idea of the 64th, 63rd, you know, you got 16 seeds. It's 18 holes. It would be akin, and again, there's not a great analogy, of you or I suggesting that some great player was going to outplay the other for one quarter of a game, whether it be basketball or football. Of course that can happen. That's essentially what we're doing here, and it's not even a perfect comparison because it's not even stroke play. It's one quarter of what would be one event playing 18 holes, and in a match play format, you can have, you know, one really bad hole, and then you cleanse yourself and you go to the next tee. I love it. I think people really enjoy it. I don't need more of it. Some people do. I think it's better that it stands by itself with just this one event.
Yeah, or during the Ryder Cup.
Right.
Yeah. And it's difficult for television to cover match play to make it as exciting as it is watching it in person. you know, you've got to follow each of these groups. By the time they walk, you've got to switch to another group because it's television. You've got to keep that action going. And in the switching from one group to another, you kind of lose the continuity. Like with Bubba Watson continually missing those putts. He could have finished off Jim Furyk so soon. And Furyk's like, wait a second, why am I still here?
So true.
Yeah.
It's so true. And the other thing that, you know, and I have no problem with who advances. We're all captive if it's Tiger and if it's Rory. But believe me, I'm thoroughly entertained by the likes of Robert Garrigus and Scott Piercy. And it's a nice cross-section in this final 16 of youth experience, you know, where they're from. And the reality is, Danielle, is that we do have 11 of the 16 players who have either appeared on the United States Ryder Cup or President's Cup team or European Ryder Cup or International President's Cup team. These guys are not void of being on the biggest stages in these match play formats from a team standpoint.
No, they're having a great... It's interesting to see how some of the guys are not playing well. Wasn't it Scott Piercy and Luke Donald and... Piercy goes, you know, I was just on. Donald was off. It's not like he was playing that poorly. It wasn't that lopsided. It's just the way it is for match play. And
exactly.
Yeah, you know, and some guys go, this is the funnest, this is the best format. I'm having such a good time because I'm just one hole. I make it through one hole, got to go to the next hole. That's something that we just don't understand too much. But it's a fun event, and it's great to see. I don't know that they'll be staying at Dove Mountain. That's snow, the snowmen and snow fights, and that was amazing to see on Wednesday.
I've not been there, so it's not fair for me to sit here in judgment of the golf course because I don't have the perspective of having walked it. I kind of defer to the people who are covering it, have been out there and talking to enough players, that there are some peculiarities to the golf course. But the one thing I got to say in its defense is that it does not eliminate a kind of a category of player when you look at who's advanced this year, when you look at who has done well there historically. It does not discriminate against the shorter player. If you can putt like Ian Poulter did in 2010 or Luke Donald did in 2011, you don't have to hit it 335 yards. I do think that match play is tough for the market itself, for the greater Tucson area. You have diminishing returns as the week progresses. You have less competitors on the golf course. And now you're into the weekend when people have the time to go out there. And if you only have two or four competitors, you want to be stimulated by a lot of golfers. And that's why I think if this event would be well served to have a rotation. If you want to keep Dove Mountain in the rotation, fine. Look at San Francisco. Look at the greater Los Angeles area. And I think you also have the opportunity to maybe attract some golf clubs that wouldn't otherwise want an event annually, but say once every 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can handle that, and we would like that. And I think it would serve the event well if they went to a rotation of four courses.
Yeah, it would be fun if a world golf championship would go around the world.
Agreed.
But it's hard if you're going from the West Coast to the Florida Swing. All these guys want to play on the PGA Tour. Where are they going to go? To Mexico? Would that, or, you know, or Canada? Could they really go anyplace further than that to get back to the East Coast?
And that is a legitimate hurdle because, you know, even though it is the end of the year, there is a World Golf Championship played in the Far East, and the reality is that a lot of the top Americans don't go. They're either winding down or they just choose not to travel that far. And you're right, to go from the West Coast time zone, possibly, you know, like you said, would you go to South America? Yeah, that's a possibility. Could you go to a place like Cabo? Sure you can. You're taking it outside the borders, but you're not necessarily taking it to a region where you're looking to either grow the game or you already have a foothold with some of the top players where you're satisfying, you know, kind of that particular area of the world and really kind of rewarding them. You're saying, look at what you've done in the game of golf and let's go ahead. But I agree with you. Somehow, some way, if you're going to tag these as World Golf Championships, it can't be like the majors where three of the four are going to be in the United States in perpetuity.
Yeah. I watch you on Golf Channel every morning on Morning Drive. I thoroughly enjoy it. I've got to tell you, you know, the man cave, kind of the first set, I kind of liked it. There was something really intimate about it. And the new set is very kind of Today Show. It's big and it's gorgeous, and you all look great, and it's fun. It's a huge cast, and 7 days a week, it's wonderful. I was watching this morning, and I've been thinking about this Olympics, this golf course that they've been trying, and I kept tweeting this. They finally told the IOC there's a land dispute where they want to build the golf course. You know, is anybody, and I was so glad when you were talking about that, and you actually talked with Gil Hans, from what I understand.
I did.
What does he say about this problem?
Well, I'll tell you, Danielle, it's really bizarre, to be honest. I talked to Gil last night for about a half an hour, and he's in Rio, and he's been doing some work on one of the two private clubs that's in Rio, and that work's basically complete. And what he told me is that while he's been aware of this and the staff that's in place to begin basically the routing of the Olympic golf course on their proposed property, mm-hmm. they're in place, that he doesn't allow the staff to talk about it, to think about it. Now, they may do it in their private time, but there's nothing they can do. So they don't want to get wrapped up in this doomsday scenario. But he's well aware of it. And he said to me, he said, Gary, I'm the most disappointed in myself for believing that this was going to go smoother than it has. And he went on to tell me that, you know, when the IOC gives a host city just that, the ability to host the Olympics, they're not, you know, moving in with bulldozers. They then allow that host city to build the infrastructure. It's their responsibility. So they're reliant on the local government, and in particular the mayor there in Rio, and that's where this thing really is kind of at an impasse, because you have two parties, one who has an interest in the property for one thing, and one who has an interest in the property for something different. But it doesn't, from what I understand, both things could be served in the end. So Gil told me that during Carnival, which is, you know, the huge festival annually there in Rio, that nothing gets done and everything gets shut down. So there is no progress that could be made. But he feels as they come out of that period that he feels some positive momentum. However, they're getting close to where this is going to get to where it's going to be 11th hour. They want to have a test event there in advance of the Olympic Games. And it's getting dicey. And the alternative, people think, well, just put it at another golf course. You don't get to build one. It's not that easy, because the logistics and the infrastructure at those clubs, they're older clubs. And here's the other most important thing, Danielle, is that the idea is that if you're going to bring the Olympics, golf back to the Olympics for the first time in 100 years, you also want to bring it to a facility that can then reward people who are interested in it by having the ability to play it. If you have it at a private club, of which there are only two in Rio, that doesn't exist on the back end of the games. So I could sense some frustration, but he does feel within the last several weeks that there is some positive momentum. But he's getting ready to begin basically redoing Trump Doral on April 1st. He'll be coming every month to Miami to work on that project while he was supposed to be at the same time doing the Olympic routing as well. It's getting to a very critical juncture, and it's not all positive. And the mayor in Rio is kind of the point person on this. It's not the IOC, and it's not the International Golf Federation that's in charge of this.
Nothing like local politics, yes?
Exactly.
Well, let me ask you this. How long do you need to build a golf course for it to be playable?
Well, the way that, you know, that's an excellent question. And I think the one thing that Gil and really the International Golf Federation has going for them is that there's not nearly the challenges that existed 25, 30 years ago. These prescription turfs and the ability to grow grass at a very rapid rate is something that could probably put them in a position if they really, really basically went, you have a very good climate in terms of not dealing with extreme weather during the winter months, they can plow through and probably get this thing done in 18 to 24 months. But again, we're getting back to where you want to have a legitimate competition there in advance, because you can't just simply put the best players in the world on a golf course that's never been tested at all because, you know, even architects and designers, as good and as hopefully as thoughtful as they are, you need people to play it and play it at the level these guys are going to play it to truly understand what little things might need to be done. And that requires 6, maybe 8 months of time to make subtle tweaks and changes to the golf course. So, you know, Gil was announced a year ago, almost to the day, at the World Golf Championship at Doral. 1 year later, nothing's been done. He didn't expect that. He didn't anticipate that. And by virtue of that, you know, this is getting to be, you know, there's a lot of anxiety and stress right now from a lot of parties, the IOC, International Golf Federation, and then the people who are right there, starting with Gil.
Interesting. Now, let's completely change, because we're tight on time, and there's so much I wanted to cover with you. We know the PGA Tour is going to come out, I guess, we don't know. Sources tell us that the PGA Tour is going to make a statement about its position on banning the anchored stroke on Sunday. That's what sources say. Most people seem to think that the PGA Tour is going to align itself with the PGA of America and be against the idea of banning the anchored stroke. My question to you is, with all that known, when are they going to say something about Vijay Singh and the deer antler spray?
Well, Danielle, boy, you asked a question that I wish I had an answer to. I understand that in the process of gathering information and doing internal investigations, particularly for an organization that works under the kind of the guise of cloak and dagger, they protect every member of the tour as if they were their own children. And, you know, anything that they do, that including possibly suspension, they don't share that information publicly. Now, they have an obligation in their own guidelines that if somebody violates the terms of their you know, performance-enhancing policy or illegal substances or banned substances policy, that they have to make a public statement. The fact that he's played a couple of competitions, I'm not completely torqued off by that, but we're getting to the point now where you're going to allow him, if in fact he is guilty of this, and he's made two admissions, one to a investigative journalist for Sports Illustrated who works extensively in this area, and then he did it again when he issued his statement. He's made the admission that he did use this. And, again, I'm trying not to dodge the question. The answer should have come already, because here's what I'm getting to. There's a 45-day appeal process that's available to Vijay Singh. If they formally announce some type of suspension and they don't do it within the next several days, you know what he's going to put himself in a position to do? Compete in the Masters at the beginning of April, of which he is obviously exempt for because he's a past champion. And I don't think Augusta National, I don't think the game of golf wants somebody who's going through a 45-day appeal process for using a banned substance to be playing in the first major championship of the year. And they have put themselves squarely in the crosshairs of dealing with that because they have not issued a statement or position on what exactly they're going to do with somebody who's admitted this on two occasions already.
You know, I just shake my head right now. I just don't understand it. I mean, somebody said on Morning Drive that if someone were to show up in shorts, you know, to play in a PGA Tour event, they would be reprimanded immediately. And here we've got a gentleman who, maybe he did it. Rory McIlroy came out and said, I don't think he did it on purpose, but he did it. So
he did it, Jermaine. And Danielle, it's not germane to, and I know that Rory said what he said, but that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
That it doesn't matter. And again, there's specific language in their own policy. I didn't make the policy, they made it. And the policy itself is flawed because, you know, the idea of HGH is something that really is not detectable unless you have blood testing. And this gets back, ironically, to the Olympics, because
exactly,
they instituted the policy to begin with because they were motivated to get golf onto the Olympic program. And they used the Olympic model, but they don't have, because they didn't either ask for it or just said, you know, it's not that important. If you can't blood test, which they can't and the Olympics can, it really is just, it's window dressing to have a policy for HGH which, again, is not detectable in urine to begin with. So it's funny how it gets back to the Olympics. I don't know why, again, they're getting ready to come to Florida. This has to be, whether it's resolved in terms of making a statement, whether it's 3, 6 months or 1 year, and then he appeals it. Again, like I said, if he's got the 45-day appeal process, and I think they'll look silly if he's at Augusta National and he's under a 45-day appeal of a six-month or one-year suspension for using a banned substance.
It's a cloud I wouldn't want to have over the Masters. It's just strange. It's strange, and they know the timeline. The PGA Tour knows its own timeline, and I know the Olympics, that's exactly what it was prepared. Why don't they do blood testing if they're going to try to conform to the IOC guidelines on drugs and keeping them out of the system of athletes who use them, albeit, yes, not for enhancing performance. In his case, in Singh's case, he was taking it, he says, to help recovery, rehabilitation. You know, whatever it was for, it doesn't really matter. It's against the rules. So
it is. And the other thing, Danielle, is that, and I don't think I'm a cynic, and I try not to be cynical, but I believe that if, you know, I think that they created this policy without the real belief that it was a problem or existed at all. And they were able to have it. It looks good, but it really doesn't have teeth when it comes to this type of substance, which is now really the vogue substance, because it allows the people who choose to cheat, of which I think it exists on the professional level very little, if at all. I don't want people to think that I think that, you know, that people are getting away with things, but the reality is that they created this, and I don't think that they thought about it because they don't think it's a real problem. They did it because they wanted to be part of the Olympic program. That was a motivation for them, but the reality is that if this was a lesser player, and this is the ultimate thing for me, would they have already come down hard on whomever that player was? This particular individual is a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, of which is run by the PGA Tour. It's their showcase during Players Week. It's how they kick off their week. It's their big dog and pony show. It doesn't look good for them. If it's a lesser player, have they already brought the hammer down? I'm sorry. I have a feeling they probably would have.
Very good thoughts from Gary Williams, host Morning Drive. You can see him tomorrow morning, 7 days a week. When do you get a day off?
You know what? They told me Tuesday, but it's just a rumor. Tomorrow will be 11th straight. And you know what, though, Danielle, as you know this, you find something you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Exactly.
I'm lucky to do what I do. And if they tell me to keep plowing through, then you know what? We're in the toy department of life. I'll keep going.
Oh, it was great. I think you've been talking for 4 or 5 hours and another 20 with me. Thank you so much for being on the show.
It's always great chat with you. Look forward to doing it again very soon.
Thank you. And we'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Poipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Poipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay.
Before I joined the first tee, the only sport I ever did was surfing channels.
I used to get C's and D's. Now I'm planning for a BA in history.
I've learned a lot at the first tee. I even learned how to play golf.
Put a golf club in a young person's hands and watch them grow. At the first tee, we instill values like confidence, judgment, respect, and integrity. Values they learn from golf but take with them for the rest of their lives.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Call Star Protection Agency for your office building, shopping center, or construction site. Let Star Protection take care 24/7. They know what to do to protect your assets, or join the Star team. Need a threat and risk assessment for your business? Call 532-3911. 532-3911. Star Protection Agency, across Hawaii since 1991. Get Star Protection.
Ah,
here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
And welcome back. You know, I'm on Twitter at The Golf Club, if you'd like to follow me. You can follow Shane Bacon, our next guest, very easily, at Shane Bacon. Now, why Twitter? Well, because, for instance, this morning from Shane Bacon, he writes, so, the fitness trainer for Bubba Watson had to get therapy after carrying Webb Simpson's golf bag for 18 holes. Welcome to the show, the editor for Yahoo Sports, Devil Ball, Shane Bacon.
Hey, how are you?
Fabulous. How are you?
I'm doing well, just watching a little golf, kind of keeping up. I just listened to you and Gary for a little bit. It was pretty good stuff.
We started with Olympics, the golf course, and Gil Hands, and of course we ended up with the Olympics because we started this drug thing, supposedly, so that we could be complying with the IOC's demands. They have expectations. If you're going to be an Olympic sport, you have to follow the Olympic rules. I just find, what are your thoughts, Shane?
Well, what's so strange to me is, I agree with what both of you said about it, but the strange part about this to me is, could you imagine if this was the NFL or baseball or basketball and they just, nobody said anything about it
for
weeks on end. I mean, it's so crazy to me that nobody's, not only is nothing happened, but nobody's even really saying much about it. I mean, it's just, I mean, to be honest, and I really honestly believe this deep in my heart, I don't necessarily think that whatever you use to your body is necessarily going to make a golfer go from one stage to another. I mean, I think golf is so mental and it's so much in your head. I mean, I think VJ still hits the ball as good, if not better, than almost everybody on tour. I mean, obviously VJ's problem has always been with the putter, but the fact that if something's illegal or banned and you use it and you get caught using it, I mean, something's got to happen. I mean, it's almost like the PGA Tour has been on vacation. It's just been really weird.
It has been really weird. That was my question to Gary to begin with. When are they going to say something? Yo, hello? It's very, very strange. We're going to hear about the anchored stroke and their position on that. Okay. That's pressing. Yeah, the deadline to communicate to the USGA. I'm sure since the PGA Tour and the PGA of America sit at the table with the USGA when they're coming up with these new rules, they've already had their input. This input now from the PGA Tour is almost like, I don't know, it's okay, we're making a public statement about what we've already said privately, whatever that happens to be. Do you think they're going to be with the PGA of America saying it should not be banned, the anchored stroke?
Well, I mean, it's just, to me, the anchoring thing is a bigger deal than the drug thing, and I understand that. I mean, I think that anchoring is an enormous advantage for people to use it. I've never used an anchored putter. I mean, granted, I'm not on the PGA Tour, shocker, but I've never used it. But I think the PGA Tour is probably going to go, with the USGA. I mean, I think that they'll eventually say you can't use it. I just think that a lot of the players, a lot of the big name guys that have won majors and stuff that have obviously come up and said that they don't really agree with it. I really believe that. Those people have put the PGA Tour in kind of a weird spot. But, I mean, eventually the banned putter is going to be banned. The anchored putter is going to be banned. I'm just not sure when it's going to happen.
Yeah, it is interesting when you talk to different people about how it assists, because when you anchor the putter against your body, it gives you that consistent swing plane, and when you anchor it, it stops you from turning the putter head to the left or the right. It kind of gives you all these different options to keep it straight and on the right path. And they say that if it was so good, then everybody would use it. But to me, it just violates the whole swing thing that, you're supposed to be swinging freely, the pendulum and all that good stuff. All right. But is it really just about the USGA imposing this ban on the anchored stroke, or does it go further into what the USGA might like to do with other equipment? Like the bifurcation of the rules of golf, does it go to the golf ball? I mean, is this just a small cog in an argument that has a larger, you know, just is bigger. I lost words.
Well, I mean, I definitely think that I agree with the USGA focusing on equipment right now, because I think equipment, the ball, well, everything's gotten a little out of hand. I mean, the fact that guys are hitting the golf ball so far, you know, the fact, I mean, everybody's more athletic, yes. Everybody's, you know, the guys are taller than they used to be. Their swings are going to create a little bit more power. But, you know, the ball doesn't need to go this far. The fact that, you know, for instance, Dove Mountain's playing 7,700 yards and nobody even blinks an eye is insane. And, you know, the fact that Scott Piercy holed out from 240 yards yesterday,
yes,
and it was for eagle, I mean,
yes,
it's just, I mean, it needs to be tamed. I mean, I don't know if you saw Lee Trevino's quotes last week when he interviewed with CBS, but, you know, he said the guys would shoot in the 50s if Augusta National was still what it used to be. And I agree with it. And I don't understand why you can't go, okay, obviously this is getting a little out of hand. Why don't we scale it back just a little bit? And, I mean, I'd like the USGA to do it. I just think maybe they've sat on their hands a little too long.
I think so, too. They have sat on their hands too long. They should let all of us recreational players play with whatever we can get our hands on. Because, right? I mean, whatever trampoline effect there is not helping me. It's helping the guys who've got a swing speed that's enormous, you know, and can really make the trampoline work for them. Let me use a ball that can go for forever. But make these professionals play with an itty-tiny bitty driver head. No Big Berthas for them. Forget that, right? Yes.
I just remember I was watching, this is how big of a dork I am. I was watching when the Golf Channel was doing all those replays of the U.S. Open. I was watching the one at Pinehurst when Payne Stewart won. And I remember for about the first 30 minutes, I kept thinking to myself, why are all these guys hitting three woods off the tee? And I realized it was just drivers. They were just so small. It looked like they were hitting. Those heads were like, I remember that old Titleist driver's head's probably smaller than what the rocket ball's head is
exactly.
Now.
Exactly. You know? I mean, itty bitty. That's what they should be playing with. Then we'd find out just how good they are.
That's right. How many guys would we not see on tour that couldn't actually produce with that stuff? If Rory McIlroy and Tiger would win like every tournament.
Now, okay, wait a minute. That what about Rory McIlroy and Nike and his, is it his swing or is it his, you know, his equipment that he was blown out again? Abu Dhabi, and he made changes and now he's gone again.
Well, this is arguably one of my biggest pet peeves in golf is when Payne Stewart changed equipment in the mid 90s, I could understand the uproar because I really do think that there were certain companies that had an enormous advantage. I think there were companies that knew exactly what they were doing and certain companies that had absolutely no idea. But the technology and the equipment, okay, I get golf clubs sent to me probably twice a week, every week. I mean, I have every driver that's out there. I test them out. I write reviews. And I can say, and I'm actually going to write something about this today, but I can say with certainty that there's not one golf company that's lacking or worse than another one. All the stuff's good now. Everything's good. Every driver's good. It goes forever. Every three wood's good. All the putters are good. The irons are the same. I mean, it's insane to me that somebody could switch golf clubs like Rory did, not play well for 2 weeks, and people flip out about his equipment. To me, it's just simply not playing. I just don't think Rory's played and got enough reps, and I think he was kind of almost going through what Tiger went through a couple of years ago when Tiger was playing so poorly, but he'd play once every 4 weeks. I mean, tournament golf's a different sport. It's a different animal. And if you're not getting your reps in, it's just going to be tough to kind of go out there and feel comfortable.
Well, I think it's all Sir Nick Faldo's fault. He's been saying that it took forever when he changed equipment for him to get his feel and all the, you know, so after that, everybody's asking. I think poor Lee Westwood, among many, was asked, what do you think about Rory McIlroy switching clubs? Do you think that's been bad for his swing? And Westwood had the best comeback. If you don't mind, I think I have that. We could actually listen to what he said. It's I just loved what he said about it, about that, you know, gee whiz, it's number G5. if we could, everyone who's there and on the podium is being asked this question, and I would never say to one of these great players like Lee Westwood or Tiger Woods or Bubba or anybody, gee, what do you think? Do you think Rory McIlroy is going to be able to adjust to that Nike equipment? This is what Lee said.
We all change equipment quite regularly out here, and he's done that, and I've changed ball three times in this year already, so and drivers a couple of times. It's no different. He's just changed manufacturers, which you know, you get used to one manufacturer and working with their people, and you have to work with another manufacturer and different people. Maybe they don't know your game quite as well. It's not my problem, is it? I've smashed my driver last week. I'm trying to find one for me. Rory's ball and driver and clubs are down here on my priority list, so it's not something I've thought about too much.
I just cracked up listening to that. It's like, you know, like, I smashed my driver. I've got problems of my own. Do I care whether my competitor has changed and whether he'll adjust? Oh, dear. But Sir Nick Faldo, he certainly has you know, said on multiple occasions that, you know, it's going to be a while before... And it's a dangerous thing to do. And so I think that's where it all started from.
Well, I mean, I would like to text message Nick Faldo and just say, I will bet you whatever amount of money you want to bet that whatever you think Rory's going to take, I'll take half the time. And, you know, for him to win or compete. You know, I mean, he played bad in his first event of the year. He got beat in a kind of a sloppy first-round match at the Accenture. But everybody loses at the Accenture. They're playing the best 64 golfers in the world. You know, to me, it's just kind of a goofy thing. I mean, I understand that we need stuff to talk about. We need controversy. We need everything. I mean, that's what we do. That's the job. But to me, I mean, Rory could play with a 1982 set of Mizunos and would shoot 65. You know, he doesn't need, you know, anything really. I mean, the guy's golf swing's incredible. He hits the ball as good, if not better, than anybody in the world. And I mean, Nike's going to make and do whatever they got to do for him. And the funny thing, too, is, you know, being out on tour and talking to the equipment guys and all that stuff is, you know, what Westwood said is correct. These guys tinker and change every single week. I mean, they've got a new driver, new three-wood, more weighted on the toe, weighted on the heel, more lead tape on their iron. It's every week they're doing something different. So if you gave Tiger a set of Titleist irons for next week in 30 golf balls on the range, he'd be fine. And, I mean... You know, that's why I get a little peeved, I guess, when people kind of say Rory made a bad decision. I mean, there's no bad decision when you're making $100 million. I mean, you know, Rory could start playing left-handed for all I care. I mean, if you're going to get $100 million, do it. And you know, I mean, and if he takes 6 months to get comfortable with equipment and he made $100 million by doing it, I feel like that's probably a pretty good return on your investment.
Shane Bacon, Devil Ball editor. That's Yahoo Sports Devil Ball. You can find him online. He writes great. He's got great videos. People are really into watching, like, YouTube and videos, aren't they? It's the new thing. Do you have Vine yet for your phone so you can take those itty-bitty videos?
You know, I did my first Vine the other day. I was down in Tucson on Wednesday for the match play, and, of course, it didn't happen. And I took a snowing Vine, and that was my first Vine I did. I guess I'm now absolutely 100% absorbed in all social media opportunities.
Shane Bacon, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Absolutely, always appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too. We'll be back after this. Neil Sagabelle is joining us. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
Do you have a child or know someone who does that wants to learn how to play golf? Free? At courses throughout the islands on March 9th, new and beginning juniors will receive expert instruction at no charge. Hawaii Junior Golf Day is brought to you by the Aloha Section PGA and the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association. To sign up, go to hsjga.org or call 532-0559.
In the security business, trust is earned over time.
That's why Star Protection Agency has grown to be the largest locally owned security company in Hawaii. We've earned a reputation as a common sense, highly responsive, cutting-edge security provider. Our clients know that we're watching out for them. We know that our fast response is what makes us a star performer.
And we'd like to thank our clients for their trust over the past 20 years.
Trust your security to the Star. Star Protection Agency.
I'm 9 now, but when I was 8, I'd do things I wasn't supposed to.
You don't talk when people are putting.
Always repair the ball mark.
You keep your own score, so you have to know how to act.
And you gotta tell the truth.
Put a golf club in kids' hands and watch them grow.
If you do certain things that you're not supposed to, you get a shot added to your score. You don't want to do those things.
The First Tee teaches kids values that will impact their communities and the rest of their lives.
If it wasn't for golf, I'd be like my friends, a couch potato.
Visit thefirsttee.org to learn more.
You scope out the sand traps. You size up the green. You're eyeing the flag. Now, it's time to choose a club, but you don't know which one to choose? That's when you turn to Danielle Tucker. Now, back to the golf club.
Congratulations, Barb from Kaneohe. You are the first qualifier this morning. Hawaiian Airlines is going to fly you to the mainland. You know, they go to all the destinations and expanding. I can't wait to talk to Hawaiian Air about the expansion plans they've got. San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, Seattle, Las Vegas, San Jose, all the S's are taken care of. It's Hawaiian Airlines and, of course, to New York as well, which I am going to do before the end of this year. Now, joining us, he came up with a wonderful book. I mean, every review I've read about this book has been very, very positive. And then the top 10 sports books of 2012 announced by Booklist, and the only book about golf is The Longest Shot, Jack Fleck, Ben Hogan, and Pro Golf's Greatest Upset at the 1955 U.S. Open. Neil Sagabelle's book is on the shortlist in the top 10. The Longest Shot author, welcome to the show, Neil.
Thanks for having me on, Danielle. It's good to be with you.
Absolutely. Congratulations. Huge. I mean, this is your first book.
It is. Yeah, it is my first book. And I was just thinking about, before I came on, I was just thinking about this whole golf journey for me has been kind of unexpected. The blog and now the book. And it's been really a lot of fun. And I was, the other day I was talking to, I was invited to talk to a sports journalism class at a local university. And they wanted me to talk about blogging and where that can lead and to, you know, sports journalism today and my own experiences and then the book. And I said there are a lot of great stories out there to tell and you can find them, but sometimes a story will find you that wants to be told. And that's the way I felt about this book. This story landed on my doorstep. I didn't really go looking for it.
The story, of course, is about, it's fascinating for us. We can't even relate to this, frankly, because in 1955, they played the game completely different. But here, the winner of the U.S. Open at Olympic in 1955 is declared before everybody's off the course. And now that wouldn't happen in today's world, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's interesting because the media landscape was totally different. We're talking 1955, and TV has really started to grow, but there aren't very many golf telecasts. So this U.S. Open was only the second national golf telecast of a U.S. Open. They only had an hour of coverage. And the USGA, the way they played the final day, they played two rounds. They put the players out on the course. They didn't always pair them just by score, and they didn't repair after the third round. So you had Hogan and Snead and some of the other leaders finishing before other guys that were out on the course, and you had them finishing within this one-hour window of the television coverage. But everyone thought Hogan had won. He was five shots ahead of everybody in the field. And when they went off the air at 6 o'clock Pacific time, 9 o'clock Eastern time, they basically said he'd won his fifth U.S. Open, which was a record. But there was this unknown from Iowa still out there on the course, and he had about five holes left, and he needed to have an incredible rally just to tie Hogan, and he was able to do that. His name was Jack Fleck.
Amazing. Amazing story. Now, you were saying that I wanted people to understand the background of it. How did this story call to you? How did you become aware of it as a blogger? How did it come into your sphere?
Well, I was blogging, and it was just really an experiment to try blogging. And I started a golf blog because I knew about golf. And through doing that blog over the course of a year or more, it grew, and you start attracting like-minded people. And because I wrote about history from time to time, some Hogan people would surface. And I got a tip to call Jack Fleck. And I knew who Jack Fleck was. I knew something about this story, but I'd never talked to the man himself. And when I had a chance to talk to him, I wasn't thinking book. I was just thinking, wow, this would really be interesting to talk to this man. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized what a fantastic story, and how come no one has written a book about one of the greatest upsets, not just in golf, but in all of sports. So I decided I'm going to give this a shot and see where it leads.
And here you are. You have a great book. And do you have plans for another?
I am in the middle of another one right now, and it will be coming out. Publishing can kind of be a slow business for sure, but it'll be coming out next year in 14. So I'm excited about that too.
I bet. Do you want to reveal what the subject is, or do you want to keep that closed?
You know, I have mixed feelings. I want people to know that I'm working on something else.
Okay.
And people who know something about The Longest Shot have read it. I really think that they'll like this next one too. It's historical. It moves up a little bit in history. But I don't want to say too much about it quite yet.
Okay, I totally understand. The way that golf tournaments were played then, you know, they pair the leaders off now so that we know exactly where they stand. We know, you know, how the field is doing. It's all very organized. But golf writing and reporting and how deadlines were met, completely different back then too, right? Those golf writers with their typewriters, they carry them around with them from place to place?
That's a good question. You know, I think they did. Actually, I think some of them did, because one of the reporters in the story that I talk about, he makes this all-night journey to San Francisco to cover the playoff. He's from Iowa. And I think he was carrying his typewriter. But also in The Longest Shot, there was Underwood, who made typewriters. I think it was the Underwood Company. Donated 50 brand-new typewriters to the press room at the Olympic Club. And that was a really big deal. You know, the press that were covering the event that week were pretty excited about that.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
That was like today's laptop, you know, having the typewriter right there. And can you imagine how noisy it would be in the press room and smoke-filled? You know, people were smoking back then, and they had a big, giant chalkboard with the scores on it. It was different.
You know, I when I was writing news, I was on a Royal, and I hated the electric typewriters because I learned on a Royal, so you pound away at those keys, right?
I am old enough to remember that too. I took typing in high school.
A little bit about Jack Fleck that I wanted to share. You know, a lot of people, it's not Jim Fleck who went into teaching, Jack Fleck, and he did have a, he's alive. He has a golf course. He served in the Navy. He was in the D-Day invasion off Utah Beach. Right after leaving the Navy, he goes right into, 2 weeks later, he's already trying to get into the PGA Tour events, right?
Yeah.
But his rural Arkansas is where he has a little place called the Little Bit of Heaven. Is that it? Little Bit of Heaven, a golf course?
Yes, he had a nine hole. He doesn't have it anymore, but he did have that course. I think he acquired it in the early 90s, and he'd moved to that area from Southern California. So today he lives in Fort Smith, not too far from there, but he doesn't own the golf course anymore. Okay. He is still playing golf pretty much every day. He's 91.
He's 90. And now, but what, you know, we think of the golfers today and what Rory McIlroy gets, $10 million or whatever it was, $20 million. After some point, it's just millions. Just to go with Nike, this gentleman, Jack Fleck, to repair the damage done to his little bit of heaven golf course in Fort Smith, Arkansas, is where he lives now, but this was in rural Arkansas. He went and pawned off his 1955 U.S. Open gold medal to rescue his golf course.
That's right. That's true. That's a story he told me. It's in the book. I think he got something like $30,000 or $35,000 for it. He didn't want to assume debt, and so he sold that medal. And he said, I don't need medals or trophies to remind me of what I did.
It just gives me, you know, goosebumps, chicken skin. I need to take care of this quick here. KPUA Hilo, KGU Honolulu, KONI Lanai City, KTOH Kalaheo. So, did you fill out let's switch to Accenture Match Play and a little LPGA. Did you fill out a bracket for the Accenture Match Play?
No, I did. I made my pick. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday on my blog. It's something I did last year too, really almost as a joke. And this is funny. You won't believe this, but last year I picked the winner. I picked Hunter Mahan, and it was just really a joke. But I put it on my blog before the match play started, and he ended up winning.
Bravo!
However, this year, the guy I picked lost in the first round. I picked Jason Duffner. So, and I, you know, how do you pick these things? I have no idea. I didn't fill out an entire bracket. No.
No. Okay. Well, you know, for those people who just picked whoever they thought was going to win, or for people who actually went through the trouble of doing brackets, it's been an interesting call. But it is what it is in golf. You can look at the stats, you can look at the equipment, you can look at anything you want to look at, but you can't see inside the person who's playing the game that day or the next day. You don't know how they're feeling. You can't predict how they're going to feel. You can't predict how their body's going to work. You can't predict how their swing, what groove they're in, whether they're feeling coordinated that day, whether their stroke's on. I think Gary Williams said that this morning on Morning Drive, you might as well just be playing darts, you know, just whoop. And it's more fun. It's more for the fun of it. And when you watch Tiger and you watch Rory and Charles Schwartzel and all these guys who are considered, you know, on and about to win something big, nah. It's a shot in the dark. That's all there is, and it's a long shot, that the longest shot that you could possibly.
Yeah. Well,
congratulations. Right. Who did you pick? This year it was Jason Duffner. See,
I picked Jason Duffner. I was trying to look for someone who maybe was a little bit under the radar, but was a solid player, and I just couldn't shake him. I just thought back to last year's Ryder Cup and how well he played, and I thought, he has the temperament and he has the game to play well in match play.
Yeah.
But coming in, I looked at his, you know, he'd only played two events this year so far. He missed one cut. He hasn't done much, but I thought, you know, he's a guy I could see doing well in match play. So I just picked him.
Yeah, he just got married, you know? I mean, he's settling in his house.
Right.
That's his that's the other thing we do. We can't factor in, you know, what's happening in your personal life. So all these things where we think we know, we think we've chosen the next great player. Jason Duffner is going to be the next great player. Scott Piercy is going to be the next great player. He's on this week, and that's something we just can't predict. It's great talking with you. Will you be on my show when you are ready to reveal your next book?
Absolutely. I'd love to come back.
Excellent. Thank you very much for being on the show with me this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Aloha. We'll be talking again with Neil Sagabell. You can find him at Armchair Golfer, Twitter. Armchair Golf is his blog. You can find and read him there. Or you should really get his book, because it's a great book, The Longest Shot. And it's about Jack Fleck versus Ben Hogan, the 1955 U.S. Open that Jack Fleck won, even though, well, everybody declared Ben Hogan the winner. We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Poipu Bay on Kauai South Shore has reopened to rave reviews. Come play our newly renovated greens. Bring the family. Invite some friends. When you stand on that tee box and see that view, you'll know why Poipu Bay makes any day special. Come join the Aloha. Visit our pro shop and take home a memory at Poipu Bay, where golf is played. Call 808-742-8711. Your tee time is waiting. Your AC runs year-round in Hawaii. Whether you're in office, store, building, or shopping center, your AC on the fritz can ruin your day and stop your business. Alaka'i Mechanical does it all, from AC sales to maintaining your AC, so it runs better and lasts longer. Alaka'i world-class professionals are using only the best parts to keep you cool. Protect your investment. From window system to cooling towers across Hawaii, call Alaka'i Mechanical, keeping you cool.
I've never had an eagle.
Heck, I've never had a birdie.
I would not recognize Jesper Parnevik.
I've never played a round of golf.
But I support the first tee.
It's teaching my daughter important values.
It gets them off the couch.
He's more patient, focused.
Self-confident.
He's just a happier kid.
At the first tee, we teach kids important values they can take with them from the golf course to their communities and to the rest of their lives.
I didn't know a little golf ball could make such a big difference.
Visit thefirsttee.org to learn more.
Oh man, will you look at that? It's right down the fairway. What a beautiful shot. Oh man, can't be too happy about that one. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on The Golf Club.
Welcome back. There's a flash flood watch up for Maui, a high surf advisory for the east-facing shores of Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, and Maui. If you're heading up to Turtle Bay, there's a 30-inch water main that's very large, and it's broken on Kamehameha, Punalu'u. So if you're going to the Turtle Bay Resort to play golf, let's say, I would take the H2. Don't go along the windward shore because they're contra-flowing, and there's only one lane in each direction through that stretch of road. They may be trying to get you around by the Ching store. It's going to be really tight through there. H2 to Kamehameha, use the north shore route, not the windward side. We've got tee times for you. Speaking of tee times, I had a couple that I just thought I had in my hands, but of course I've lost them, so I'll have to bring them up for you in just a couple of seconds. In the meantime, I'm just thrilled with the leaderboard, the LPGA leaderboard that's happening right now, Honda LPGA Thailand 2013. Arya Jutanagarn is in the lead. She's 11 under. The next to her is, well, there's a tie for a second, actually, but seeing Suri Pak in there with Beatrix Vicari and Stacey Lewis, awesome. Just a great, but this youngster, these teenagers are getting way too good. Speaking of tee times, as I was, Hapuna, there is a 10:06 volcano. It was 51 degrees this morning, 12 o'clock and 12:36 should be warmed up for you. Poipu has an 11:10 and twilight, and the Kauai Interscholastic Federation, I believe, is playing a round of golf or two or having a tournament. We're going to find out now. Craig Sasada is joining us from Poipu Bay Golf Course, our director of golf. Welcome to the show, Craig.
Morning, Danielle.
Good morning. Who's playing at Poipu Bay?
It's the, uh,
They're normal league matches. I guess their season starts, so it's the Kauai High Schools, Waimea, Kauai High, and Kapa'a.
Excellent. Fantastic. And they come out and play at Poipu. It's a beautiful, beautiful place to play. There's an 11:10 and a twilight. It's a busy day at Poipu. And just get out and play. You know, that's where they played the Grand Slam of Golf until 2006. And, you know, you think sometimes that, gee, those really great players played it. Maybe it's too it's too tough for me. It's not. You know, it's as you play it. Just tee it forward. Don't hit from, you know, way back there. Isn't that really the way to play?
Well, for sure. I know I don't play from way back there.
Yeah. I mean, why make the game difficult? It's difficult enough, you know. Play it from a reasonable position where you know you can get to the middle of the fairway. And then from, you know, just be reasonable with yourself. The expectations we have are just so incredibly enormous. It drives me crazy. And we want people to play and enjoy the game, so they'll come back and play some more. The question I asked Neil Sagabel just a minute ago is whether or not he filled out his brackets for this match play event. Did you?
Unfortunately, no, I didn't.
Did you pick a winner?
Well, yeah, I was actually, you know, thinking between the horses there between Woods and McIlroy.
Oh, those two.
Yeah, those got shot out pretty quickly there.
The guys that got busted from the very beginning, busted the brackets. Yeah, it is very difficult to pick a winner.
The one that really was surprising, you know, Tiger, he does do that every once in a while these days, but McIlroy to lose in the first round after, you know, his start to the year and, you know, the rest he took coming into this match play, I think a lot of people probably thought he'd do a lot better than what he did in the first match.
Yeah, in Abu Dhabi he had a difficult time, and he hasn't been playing. He's been kind of like, you know, hanging out with his girlfriend and, you know, going, I think they were in the south of along the Mediterranean, south of France. He was watching her play tennis somewhere in the world, and he's not really competing really seriously. Now, when you go into competition, Craig Sasada, a PGA professional, competed in Hawaii at the highest level. Isn't that a different way? I mean, it's a completely different ball game than when you're just going out to play a round of golf.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously you never competed at their level, but to play, you know, to get ready for any kind of event, whether even if it's your club championship, I think you know, you just can't go in there and say, okay, I hope I do well today. You know, there is probably a window that he or she will be practicing to work on a specific part of the game with the course in mind that they're playing and just to get themselves prepared, so... But, you know, Rory, with all the talent that he has, you know, right now he's probably just going through, you know, a phase where he thinking his game probably can carry him through. But, you know, like anyone else, they will need practice no matter how good you are. You know, look at Tiger Woods, it's hard as he practices every day.
Right. And but then you've got to compete. You've got to put that practice into action, right? You've got to put it in the nerves. Everybody's going to have butterflies. Otherwise, why do you do something? You know, when you stop getting nervous about what you're doing and being a little bit unsure, that's what drives you forward.
Well, yeah, just like Tiger right now, you know, he's going into three tournaments in a row.
Yes.
He's scheduled to play. So.
Yes, exactly. This is interesting. Speaking of Rory McIlroy, Shane Lowry defeated his good friend. They're buddies.
Right.
So defeated Rory McIlroy and then Carl Peterson, and both Shane and Russ Henley, you know, the Sony Open winner,
right?
They were called bracket busters because they blew out the top seeds. And Henley took out, I think, Charles Schwartzel, one of my picks. And Lowry beat Rory McIlroy in the first round, and Carl Peterson in the second. Now, he was asking, he said, I hope I play against Graham McDowell. Now, all these Irish guys, you know, I think it's so cute. So he was... He got all these texts and all these communiques from his friends and his family when he beat Rory. He was on a high. He still got 8 hours of sleep. These guys sleep for 10 hours. Isn't that amazing? I want to sleep for 10 hours. But this is where he says his friends and family will be, probably in a pub watching.
That's not
I'm sure they're all
in
the local pub, having a few drinks, watching the golf on Sky. And I'm sure they're there now, and they're celebrating my win tonight or today as well. So hopefully I can give them something to cheer about tomorrow as well.
Yeah, you know, but isn't it, a pub is not like a bar. A pub is like a community center. You know, people go down to the pub and they talk and they hang out and they watch television together. And then when church happens, it closes down and you shut down the pub on Sunday and everybody goes to church and then they open it up later on. It's a very interesting sort of dynamic. A pub in a small town in any of the parts of the UK that you might go to. It's very interesting. I can just see them, you know, just rallying around that television. Very exciting stuff to see. And I couldn't help but take Ian Poulter, okay? I'm going to say it. I'm sorry it was not a U.S. player. I'm guilty. But watching Ian Poulter play match play, it's hard to bet against him.
Well, he has a great match play record, yeah. And I think I seen the graphic when I was watching television earlier this morning. He's like 30-10, and you know, his Ryder Cup record speaks for itself. So, you know, he's pretty tough in match play. He kind of brings his game up another level when he plays just one-on-one. So, you know, Poulter's pretty tough. I mean, he could win this pretty easily.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, saying Poulter's not going to bring out the, you know, the Poulter beast, the Poulter match play beast.
Yeah. Well, you know, even Hunter Mahan's playing well, too. So
yes.
He's a champion there, too. So
yeah, he's the defending champ. It's
right.
Great to see. You know, usually the defending champ is the first one out.
Right.
You know?
It's like, well, it looks like he's going to go into the next round, too. So
yeah, you're watching on Golf Channel?
My computer.
You're watching on your computer. Isn't that great? The PGA Tour is making it, you know, you can watch on your iPad, you can watch on your phone if you can stand that small screen, itty-bitty screen. That drives me crazy. I want to see it. I want to DVR it and go home and watch it, but you can watch it right now. We're watching, Steve Stricker and Scott Piercy. Scott Piercy is the young man who, I think he put everything on the line in Las Vegas. And won $2 million. I mean, he practically, you know, had nothing left in his bank account, and he came out on top. Yesterday, he eagled out from over 200 yards away. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see. I heard about it from, what, 240 or something like that?
Yeah, he's going to describe what it was like for him. Okay, this is the second shot. It's for an eagle on the par 5. Fifth hole, and it's Scott Piercy. He moved into the third round with a 7-6 win over Luke Donald. He said it wasn't like he was playing that well. He was on, but Luke Donald just wasn't having a good day.
That was pretty, man. It was I had 221 into the wind, and Luke had hit a second shot, you know, 50-60 yards short of the green in the bunker, and really I was just trying to hit like a little cut 4-iron low, roll it up on the green. Kind of put the pressure back on him to hit a good bunker shot to try to get up and down, and I flushed it and started on. I mean, it's just, you never imagine that you're trying to make it, you know. It's just, that's luck, but it was perfectly executed, just a low cut and hit right into the slope and disappeared.
That makes you come back to the course.
You kind of like how they say this. I was 221 into a little wind, so I just tried to hit a little cut 4-iron in there on the front. And
you never imagine it's going to go in, but there it went, disappeared.
No, just a little cut 4-iron into the wind at 221.
I know, that's crazy. It's crazy, right? And you are supposed to visualize that it goes in. That's the mental game. Come on, dude. But at least he was honest about it. Yeah, all right. So some of the things that, you know, are going on in the game, some of the controversy, which, by the way, I think we need to stop talking about rules. I think we scare people away. The constant talk about the golf rules, about the anchored stroke being banned. I mean, it makes it sound so you know, complicated, and so difficult. I just don't understand. Then we've got the antler spray thing going on, and whether or not, you know, when's the PGA Tour going to talk about the deer antler spray, and what's up with Vijay Singh? Are they going to do something about that? And all these, the USGA eliminating the U.S. Public Links Amateur and creating the four-ball team competition, and USGA wants to improve the pace of play, and the PGA Tour and the PGA of America are going to go against the USGA, maybe, in the statement tomorrow. Is there anything that is a hot-button issue for you, Craig Sassada? Do you pay any attention to all of this?
Well, you know, I guess the biggest one would be the pace of play. I agree they should try to speed up the game. You know, especially, I mean, that goes for all, not just for what the people we see on TV, but even for recreational golf. It actually makes it more fun when the game is more of a pace versus you hit and wait, you hit and wait. And, you know, it should be a flow to the game that, you know, like anything else, you get into a rhythm, you start to play better. So, but it makes the game more enjoyable if you kind of play it at a decent pace. So if anything, there'd be one thing where they could, I don't know how they could do it in events, but, you know, that would be the, to me, the number one rule they could get that enforced would be pace of play. But as far as anchoring the putter, you know, that one, I would hope that they wouldn't ban it. It helps so many other people, not just playing better, but even for health reasons. So I hope they don't ban it, but and a bifurcation of the rules of golf between the PGA and the USGA and the RNA, I don't know if that would work, but that wouldn't somehow seem correct to me if you split the rules up for professionals versus other players. You know, the rules should be the rules, but
I agree with you. Can we take a break, because we're going to get another qualifier for our trip to San Francisco?
Sounds good.
And we'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Call Star Protection Agency for your office building, shopping center, or construction site. Let Star Protection take care 24/7. They know what to do to protect your assets, or join the Star team. Need a threat and risk assessment for your business? Call 532-3911. 532-3911. Star Protection Agency, across Hawaii since 1991. Get Star Protection.
Have a child or know someone who does that wants to learn how to play golf free at courses throughout the islands on March 9th, new and beginning juniors will receive expert instruction at no charge. Hawaii Junior Golf Day is brought to you by the Aloha Section PGA and the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association. To sign up, go to hsjga.org or call 532-0559.
I'm 9 now, but when I was 8, I'd do things I wasn't supposed to.
You don't talk when people are putting.
Always repair the ball mark.
You keep your own score, so you have to know how to act.
And you gotta tell the truth.
Put a golf club in kids' hands and watch them grow.
If you do certain things that you're not supposed to, you get a shot added to your score. You don't want to do those things.
The First Tee teaches kids values that will impact their communities and the rest of their lives.
If it wasn't for golf, I'd be like my friends, a couch potato.
Visit thefirsttee.org to learn more.
It's The Golf Club. Visit our website at www.radiogolfclub.com. You can hear previous archived shows. Just hit the listen button and pick the show you want to hear. Email Danielle with your thoughts and requests. Contact us about advertising and check out our sponsor links. That's www.radiogolfclub.com. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on The Golf Club.
And welcome back. Okay, we're going to switch over to the LPGA Thailand 2013. The Honda. I should put the sponsor in there, right? Honda LPGA Thailand 2013. Michelle Wee's not having a good time, Craig.
I watched just a little bit of it, and I know she was over par at one point. I'm not sure how she finished.
Well, she had a 74, 71, 71. Last week, she didn't make the cut, you know. I think she's playing a little bit better this week. But when you watch somebody like Lydia Ko, and she was 15. Remember when her game was on?
Correct.
It must be hard for her to watch these young players like the one who's in the lead right now, Arya Jutanugarn. They're two tie sisters, you know, shot 70, 60, 69, 66, 70. And Siri Pak is at the top of the leaderboard. That's great. And Stacey Lewis and Beatrice Ricari and Inbee Park. We have such a global game going on. I really hope that Michelle can get her game together.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you kind of hit the nail on the head there by saying that, you know, with Lydia Ko at 15 years old, she looks like she's another level above even Michelle when she was at 15 years old. But it just goes to show that at that age, with that talent, no fear. And I think Michelle had no fear at that time. Whether or not that's coming back as you got more mature, but yeah, she needs to get back to, hard to say, but to her junior days.
Yeah, when she didn't doubt herself.
Right, just play the game.
Yeah, you know, not a lot of scar tissue from experiences that don't come to fruition. And Lydia Ko seems to be able to just throw it out the door. You know, she has a mental coach. She has a huge team of people who are helping her. Not unlike what we assume Michelle Wee had, you know, and all of the players now, they have all of this huge support mechanism that they work with a fitness trainer. They work with all these people to make their game perfect. It's really something to see, you know, to watch them. And I know how hard it is for these young ladies to make a living on the tour, and I want more attention to be paid to it, and I can't wait for them to come back to the States. And they're going to be, the Kia Classic is coming up soon, and we've got the first major of the event of the year. We've got the Founders Cup and then Kraft. So it's going to be fun talking about the women in the game and actually seeing them live. Somehow we have to get better television coverage. That's the hard part. It's a global sport. And it's wonderful that it is. I mean, we're way too U.S.-centric. You know, we need to understand that the planet Earth, we all live on together. And, of course, we're going to be supporting our own players. But it's good that it's global. We need to become a more worldwide sport. I think it's interesting that we're concerned about growing the game in the United States when 2 or 4 years ago we were talking about globalizing the game. Do you remember that?
Vaguely, actually, for us here in the U.S., like you're saying, you know, when the golf rounds were down, us as a PGA collective, obviously, we were trying to keep the players that we had. So, and, you know, one of the things was to introduce the game to the newer players, the new players, I guess, that never played, only watched TV when Tiger would play or McIlroy's playing, and you wanted to get them on the golf course. But I agree, you know, with the game becoming so big, and especially on the men's tour, the money so big, you know, it did bring out more and more players on the boys' side, I guess, because they're looking towards what they can do later.
Exactly.
Yeah, and hopefully we can do that in the women's game.
Exactly.
Where the young girls want to do that. But, you know, if you got Stacey Lewis right now, she can do this for the next 10 years. You could get that. You know,
yeah.
She's playing well. So.
Yeah, and we need, the purses need to increase so that even the women who aren't in the top 50 can actually make a living.
Correct.
Yeah, you know, I mean, otherwise you have no depth, which is what the PGA Tour has. Anybody can win on any given day.
I agree.
Yeah, they're all really, really good. Stan of Wailuku is really excited because he's qualified to be in the drawing for the trip for two to San Francisco on Hawaiian Airlines and stay 4 nights. Yes, at the Palace Hotel. It's a luxury collection hotel. It's just one of our gifts to our listeners. It's our anniversary flyaway. And thank you to Poipu Bay. Thanks for being on the show, Craig Sasada.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you. Thank you for making the golf club possible. Star Protection. For property threat and risk assessment, you go to Star Protection. They tell you what needs to be done, and then they can protect your home or your business. Get the Star Team on your property. Star Protection's what you need in Hawaii and California. Poipu Bay Golf Course, 18 championship holes, visually stunning. Nature and Robert Trent Jones, they came together and create a stunning venue for golfers of all abilities. Do not be intimidated. Go. It's a unique, unforgettable golfing experience. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore gem. Thank you for your mama, and may you hit the sweet spot every time. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
Copyright 2013.